Part 2, Creation of Mental Energy. However, a few guideposts can be set up. One is that sex should not be attacked as an evil. We have no choice but to attack the problem with all the will and vigor we can muster, but we should avoid attacking ourselves. We should also constantly remind ourselves that we are determined to be celibate, but that we will not blow our brains out if we are occasionally remiss in the early days of the attempt. This seems paradoxical. We must be determined, yet we should never be uptight. Our perseverance should be in the head, watching how we outwit ourselves, or how nature outwits our fumbling attempts. We should never take the stand that nature is evil either. The sexual organs are an integral part of the whole carcass, and without them we would not exist. Nature will tolerate a leave of absence, and nature has a process or safety valve for such periods. This safety mechanism, the automatic overflow of prostate fluid in the male, will, however, only work efficiently while the body is young and elastic. It should not be relied upon when we approach or enter the 40s. Most cases of enlightenment occur before 40 anyway, if we can credit the findings of R. M. Bucky, who has done extensive research on conditions of enlightenment. So we should not plan to go on indefinitely with the celibate experiment. It is consequently important that we try sincerely, however. Just leading a half-hearted pretense of celibacy with the idea that something has to happen before 40 would be unwise. Rather, we should live as though we knew we had to take advantage of the younger years when the body is elastic, knowing that if we do not achieve Satori in those years, we are out of luck. Getting back to guideposts, celibacy should be approached mentally, not physically. No physical means of repression is advisable. A few frantic fanatics have castrated themselves, not realizing they were removing the energy reactor. Others have taken drugs or chemicals. It is rumored that monasteries and penal institutions slip saltpeter or other sexual depressants into the coffee or food. Some of these chemicals so taken may either cause cancer or may serve as a chemical castration, which will deprive the subject the energy which could be raised from sexual vitality. Celibacy can be approached mentally, and the best way, once again, is by reversing the mental vectors that are oriented downward. If the sexual urge is persistent and strong, we should get into some sort of discipline, mental, that will keep the mind occupied so that it will not wander into morbid reverie. Thoughts incite glands, and glands reinforce thought processes and even arouse the thoughts. When the glands are ready, the thoughts appear as out of nowhere. When the female is fertile, the body will remind her even if she has not consciously remembered the time of the month. This is noticed in animals and is more evidential when observed in animals such as the cow, because cows do not have calendars. They do not say to themselves, "I have 10 more days and then I will come into heat." They will be grazing silently and quietly, and all of a sudden they will stop eating and look up and begin to grow restless. In a few minutes they will bawl and head for the nearest bull. This clock is ovarian more than cerebral. The chicken does not have a calendar either. It breeds when the ovarian cycle is at the right point, ready for fertilization. It does not breed because it first has lustful thoughts. The lustful thoughts, if she bothers to think about it at all, are the result of a physical timing device. For this reason, celibacy for females involves a different discipline than for males. In the male, the glands can incite the thoughts with a frequency that has been set by the male's previous frequency of sex. In other words, if the male has been used to a daily outlet, he will build up sexual replacement fluid every 24 hours. His first step is not total abstinence then, but the deliberate indulgence for a while, every other day, then every third day, and so on. Watching all the while for the inclination to be over-intense in those holidays from celibacy. And all the while that he is carrying on this physical withdrawal, he should keep his mind occupied 24 hours a day with either sleep or non-identifying studies. If he goes for a walk or is in a place where he is unable to read or study, even while doing physical work, he should try some sort of chant or prayer that will serve to remind him each moment about his intentions. Something should be said about intentions. You cannot force yourself to have intentions. If you join a group because you feel you need their company or for other social reasons, sometimes it is the challenging ego that likes to boast in ability for impossible tasks. A few months of celibate living will bring you around to face yourself. If your real drive is sex and you have not developed a previous philosophic commitment to enable you to see the desperate need of total action, then your real intentions will make themselves known to you and you will drop out of the group because you will not find the challenging ego as important as the sex drive or sex ego. Before entering the celibate path, you should know clearly what you are getting into. You should realize the somatic reactions and the sweeping catalysis of uncontrolled reverie. In other words, do not underestimate nature. The many forces of adversity will bombard even the most philosophic head with the astute rationalization when the heat is on. You must know beforehand that you are going to be impressed and strongly impressed by the hormones that will find their way through the blood into the thought patterns. Voices within you will not always cry out for sex. We are watching for that attack. The voices will cry out doubts and accusations of folly. We will start to doubt if we are doing anything more than kidding ourselves. And we can at any time pick up a dozen books on modern psychology that will tell you that sexual perversions and degeneracies even have been liberated from limbo, and on the other side of the fence, sexual repression has been damned as insane. Crowley's "Do What Thou Wilt" has become the theme of modern psychology. If sex is prompted by demons, as some church fathers tell us, then the devil must be depicted without the pitchfork if he is to be modern. All religion is caught up with progressiveness. The modern devil would be holding an ice pick, wearing a stethoscope and pillbox for the sufferers of dissipation. The Hindus say that the cause of all suffering is desire. It can be said more plainly by the superintendent of the local insane asylum, the home for exceptional people. He said, when I asked him about his consensus of case histories in looking for causes for insanity, "Nearly all our cases could have been avoided if the individuals had kept their pants buttoned," he said. In deifying sex, this man's modern opponents will produce more insanity, and society will be convinced of the need to build bigger and better quarters for lunatics. The better quarters should be reserved for the guardians of our sanity who are deserting us in increasing numbers through suicide. You cannot turn your back on 6,000 years of monastic experimentation and on conclusions about mental well-being that have come about by learning to live over periods of thousands of years. Evolution has brought us, up to the turn of the century at least, to a strong belief that sex was the source of all our trouble. There must have been some good reasons for those conclusions. I realize that monastic life without a comprehensive scientific approach to celibacy played hob with the inmates. I also realize that religion stumbled a bit in trying to kill off all the devils by shutting off their energy supply, and in so doing, invented all sorts of ecclesiastical mumbo-jumbo that made for financial independence for the clergy and saved slavery for the peasants. Marriage was a form of sexual restriction that was not just socially helpful, it was hygienic as well. Sexual promiscuity, while fulfilling the demands of nature, pregnancy, also contributed to the spreading of congenital defects and diseases. In this generation of youthful license, we should postpone our lechery until we are too old to hurt anyone, and then maybe it will be weaker. I am encountering hundreds and hundreds of young people whose sex lives have brought them to a point of suicide or suicidal tendencies. Do What Thou Wilt has encouraged them to mix sex with dope, booze, and even with ritualistic magic, and the results have become frightening. One lady, 28, claimed that she had 5 demons or entities inhabiting her body. She ascribed it to smoking grass and tampering with sex at the same time. I felt that she was only telling me half the details, but she was getting the point across. We are that which we do. I am using up this space to talk about sex because the student embarking upon a path of celibacy should not ever be swayed into thinking he is inadequate in the path or insane. One of the first fruits of celibacy, in fact, is peace of mind. When you finally are free from the identification, the freedom brings with it such an exaltation that you can only be tempted by yourself. You have to watch for narcissism then. The most wonderful years of my life were the 7 from 21 to 28 that I spent in celibacy. Even though I was ignorant in those days of the requisite protective science and made a few painful mistakes. Our manifest natural purpose is reproduction prior to death. If we are to have or are to manifest another purpose, that of searching for our definition, then we cannot allow the natural downward vector of sex to prevent us from that purpose. Getting back to inner convictions and the vacillation of purpose, we should realize beforehand that for the first few months of celibacy, will involve turbulence. During that turbulence, we are apt to practice self-recrimination and try to reason that this celibacy thing is unnatural because it heightens the discomfort. But before you started on the path, you knew that sex was turbulent, whatever the form of expression you had for the outlet. And if you depart from celibacy to find some period of time as a respite from turbulence, or if you rationalize that you really should get married so that marriage will take care of the turbulence while you are pursuing spirituality, you will find that few marriage partners are cooperative with any idea of limited sexual activity or with any form of religion that does not bless the connubial act as being everything from nice to sacred. The body will follow if the mind leads. The big handicaps in relation to celibacy are the mental games and their infinite variety. One of the traps that sometimes results from unscientific celibacy is sexual deviation, especially if the person is inclined to some degree in that direction to begin with. There is an inclination to blame all turbulence on the opposite sex and to consider the opposite sex to be sinful. What follows then is a justification or endorsement of the indulgence in any sex act so long as it does not involve the opposite sex. Eve is considered, therefore, to be the genesis of all evil. Sacred books and philosophic works are quoted and misquoted to reinforce that which the male deviate wishes to believe. The female deviate likewise is able to find quite a few sources that will sustain any wish that she has to believe that men are the factor behind all feminine sin, shame, and failure.